WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News special report. We got an update on President Trump's swollen legs this afternoon. More from CBS News chief medical correspondent, Dr. John LaPook.
The White House announced that the president has chronic venous insufficiency. And before getting to that diagnosis, you have to make sure that there's not some other serious condition. And they said that they ruled out any problem with his heart, any problem with his kidneys, or any blood clots in the veins.
The White House says it's a benign condition, common in people over 70, and the president is in no discomfort. How do you treat chronic venous insufficiency?
The mainstay is elevation of the legs to help the blood return to the heart. And also you can have compression stockings that go from the knee down 20 to 30 millimeters, and that helps sort of push the blood back into the veins.
The White House explained the bruising on the president's hand was caused by a lot of handshaking and the aspirin he takes as part of his cardiovascular health regimen. CBS News special report. I'm Michael Wallace.
WAUK News brought to you by the Summer Splash Dog Show at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, July 25th to July 27th. Fun for the whole family. WaukeshaSummerSplash.com.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. The National Weather Service is investigating at least 10 possible tornadoes yesterday, mostly in southwestern Wisconsin, but as far east as the Watertown area. Meanwhile, the state is joining yet another lawsuit against the Trump administration, this time over education funding. Attorney General Josh Call says the move includes 23 other states. The lawsuit argues that the Trump administration withholding more than $6 billion for schools and adult education programs is illegal and unconstitutional. Wisconsin was supposed to get about $72 million on July 1st. Instead, the state was notified on June 30th that money would not be coming. It was already authorized by Congress in a bill that was signed into law by President Donald Trump just 4 months ago. Superintendent Jill Underley says, quote, Wisconsin schools depend on these dollars to serve kids. Make no mistake, stopping this money has already harmed and will continue to harm our families and communities, end quote. Wisconsin's technical colleges are glad the state has joined this lawsuit. Joanne Krulatz reports.
Wisconsin Technical College System supports Wisconsin joining the coalition of states suing the Trump administration to restore funding under the Adult Education and Family Literacy Act. Of the 34,000 students enrolled in adult education at Wisconsin's 16 technical colleges each year, over 17,000 depend on Adult Education and Family Literacy Act funding to access essential services through the technical colleges and community-based organizations. In the 2023-24 academic year alone, over 2,500 of these learners enrolled in post-secondary occupational programs at these colleges, programs that directly lead to career pathways and help meet the workforce needs of Wisconsin employers.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
An update on the Brewers' Sal Frelick. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers head to L.A. to play the Dodgers tomorrow night, but their starting right fielder and leadoff batter, Sal Frelick, may not be able to play. An MRI showed Frelick suffered a minor hamstring injury Sunday against the Nationals, but for now, he's day-to-day. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Hurt my heart, you know, like he's such a key cog in this whole thing. That just ruined my day.
NBA, the Bucks have re-signed backup center Chris Livingston to a one-year deal worth $2 million. That comes after losing Brooke Lopez to the Clippers following seven seasons in Milwaukee.
You know, free agency came. Everything happened pretty fast, but looking at my options, I was just thrilled the Clippers reached out. They've been a great team quite a while now, you know, and there's just, you know, a great chance to win a championship here.
The Bucks lost to the Bulls last night 102-98 to close out their summer league schedule. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
A fall feel today with a northwest breeze and clouds clearing. High temperatures only flirt with 70 degrees. Tomorrow, we get a little warmer to the mid-70s with abundant sunshine, and then at night, showers and storms are expected, leaving us with a darker and damper Saturday and more sunshine on Sunday. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 64.
Bring the whole family to the Waukesha Kennel Club's Summer Splash Dog Shows at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, July 25th to 27th. Enjoy exciting events like dock diving,
fast cat racing, obedience, and the thrilling Best of Show competition. It's fun for all ages. Check out the vendors and find the best pet supplies for your furry friends. It's the perfect weekend for dog lovers and families alike. Sponsored by Royal Canin at 540 AM WAUK. Visit WaukeshaSummerSplash.com for all the details.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I came walking in here just a moment ago, and there was a young lady sitting here with a chicken.
It's fantastic.
On the table.
Kaylee High from Staley Boyd High School. What's the line of bird?
So this breed, is breed. Sue. She's a Dominique, and she's 6 years old.
Is Sue here? Does she lay eggs?
She did used to. She's too old.
So chickens go through menopause?
Yes.
Aren't
they? Yeah,
really?
Much. Yeah, basically.
It's a postmenopausal chicken. My sisters can relate.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll be talking the World Lumberjack Championship powwows in Hayward, live from Hayward, Wisconsin, with Jane Matinera, Greg Bach, and myself. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond, 540 WAUK.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield. Where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
You see our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Thursday afternoon to you if you're in the Milwaukee area. Hope you're enjoying the Air and Water pre-show as the Blue Angels take it to the skies for their practice routes. We've got some breaking news right at the top of the hour. State Representative Robin Vining is, as we speak, announcing her campaign for State Senate in Wisconsin's 5th District. As we've been discussing over these many days since the biennial budget has been adopted, compromise budgets never please anybody. And if we want a better budget that better serves the middle class and working families in this state, we're going to need a better legislature. Certainly, Representative Vining's campaign for the 5th Senate District is a step in that direction. Everyone will be watching the Wisconsin Senate races come 2026, no exception here on Civic Media. There's also been some breaking news at the state level. As the number of lawsuits filed by Attorney General Josh Call against the Trump administration for what can only be termed arbitrary and capricious, retaliatory, discriminatory, I don't know, lots of unconstitutional and just dumb reasons, has been canceling critical grant funding and other federal funds into this state, specifically in the area of education. We welcome the Attorney General to this program now. Welcome back, Attorney General Call. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me, Maggie.
So let's just keep it to this month. If we go all the way back, there's more lawsuits. But just this month, you have joined with other states in filing two lawsuits against the Trump administration. Let's start with the most recent one. This is Donald Trump's canceling, withholding nearly $72.6 million in critical educational funds for the state of Wisconsin. These are what are called title grants. Tell our listeners a little bit about this lawsuit, why you filed it, what the claims are, and why it's important.
Yeah, well, first of all, the number of suits is really growing. It's hard to keep track of the exact number. We're over 20 cases filed challenging actions of the Trump administration. And, you know, a number of them have to do with unlawful cuts to funding for programs where Congress has passed a bill. It was signed into law by the president, often a prior president. And the Trump administration, rather than executing the law and awarding the grants, is simply blocking the funds that have been appropriated. And that's just not its constitutional role in our system of government. So in this case, it's over 70 million grants in Wisconsin alone that are being impacted that would go to support various types of education. That includes things in programs around the country, like after school programs. It includes education programs for adult learners. So, for example, adults who might want to go to get their high school degree or learn English to improve their English. Those kinds of grants are being blocked. And it's part of a pattern of what we've seen. You mentioned that they've been attacking education, and that's right. But ultimately, what we've seen from the Trump administration is efforts to dismantle programs that provide opportunities for Wisconsinites and for Americans. And so here, as we have in a number of other cases, we've brought suit.
It seems to me, Attorney General, that the idea of a level playing field and providing people with equal opportunities and equal access and an equitable chance to succeed in their life is what's really under attack here, and specifically under attack for folks that are poorer, right, that come from more underserved communities that will end up harming rural folks the most. It seems very contrary to Donald Trump's base support, if you will, right? Like, if we just take at face value, oh, I'm going to help out the working families of America, this seems to fly directly in the face of that, because I don't care who I'm talking to, Republican, Democrat, independent folks that don't care about politics at all, almost all of us agree that education is the key to eventually doing better than your parents did and providing great opportunities for your children, and that without that, it's very difficult to succeed these days. What do you think, I mean, other than just dismantling federal government and making arbitrary cuts, is there a rationale here? Every time I read one of these executive orders or these letters that are terminating grants, it just says, based on presidential and administrative priorities. What the heck are the priorities other than making sure billionaires and megacorporations get larger tax breaks?
No, I think you're getting at exactly the point. I mean, what's happening is that government is being slashed. And when we say government, let's be specific about what we're talking about here. We're talking about slashing funding for education. So there's this effort to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education, first of all. But then on top of that, there are these cuts we've been talking about here. There were cuts, which we have another lawsuit over, involving grants that support mental health, the provision of mental health services in schools.
Yes.
So education is one area that has been targeted, but healthcare and public health is another area that's been targeted with efforts to significantly reduce what the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services does, efforts to reduce funding for National Institute of Health grants that look into diseases that support research into diseases like cancer and other deadly diseases. So less support for programs that help keep people healthy and help people get access to healthcare. We just filed a suit regarding efforts to deny funding for disaster relief preparation. FEMA grants are being denied. So leaving people more susceptible to being impacted by disasters. And again, in all of these things, what we're seeing is efforts that promote opportunity are being pulled back by the Trump administration. And then what we also saw in the bill that recently passed Congress, of course, is massive tax cuts for some of the wealth that disproportionately benefits some of the wealthiest people in the country. And that's what's going on here. Opportunity is being eroded while more money is being funneled towards massive tax cuts that disproportionately benefit the wealthiest people in the country.
Yeah, you mentioned the lawsuit over FEMA funding. We're going to be joined here on the show this afternoon by Tom DiLiberto. He's a former climate scientist at NOAA, to talk about the science that is behind protecting vulnerable communities, specifically related to flash floods, of course, coming on the heels of just incredible loss of life in Texas and other floods in North Carolina, the flooding of the subway system in New York City. So we're going to be talking about that. Attorney General, in my mind, I can't help but envision this caricature of, you know, the corporate overlord boss in the smoky back room with the cigars, right? Like, how do we really, you know, give it to the workers and extract as much as we can out of them, almost a return to these Gilded Age times in the early 1900s that led us into the Great Depression, where there were no worker protections, where there were no things like NOAA and the National Institutes of Health that were trying to promote the public's health, safety, and welfare, where a bunch of the wealthiest men in the universe basically divvied up the pie and decided who was going to be winners and losers and had nothing to do with actually supporting working people. Is the caricature an overstatement, or is that what we're looking at?
No, I think we're seeing a repeat of that kind of history. I mean, you know, take one of the provisions that fortunately came out of the bill that was ultimately passed by Congress, but there was an effort to prevent any regulation at the state level of AI for a decade. Now, overwhelmingly, the Senate removed that provision from the bill, but you know, you can imagine that that tech billionaires would have loved to have you know, unfettered ability
to
develop AI without any intervention from states, but that would leave consumers less able to be protected. And it would leave us without an opportunity to take action to help ensure that technology was being used properly. It's one of many examples, but we're seeing it throughout government. That's why we're seeing so many of these suits. I will also add, we're also winning a lot of these suits, or at least getting initial orders that block the Trump administration from moving forward. So while it's concerning what they're trying to do, it's not all bad news, because the courts in a number of cases have pushed back. But right now, there's a lot of litigation over what direction we're going to go in policy, and whether the president can just ignore laws that were passed by Congress and deny funding that Congress has appropriated from states and from other entities that should receive it.
I want to put a pin here for all of our listeners. I want you to keep in your head what Attorney General Call just said, because later in this program, I'm going to address the tens of millions that the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin has spent on outside counsel, because the hypocrisy in how MAGAs here in the state of Wisconsin approach shared governance and what the powers of the executive branch are here in the state of Wisconsin, including the powers of your office, Attorney General, versus how they approach those very same questions when you talk about the powers of the Donald Trump presidency is truly, truly shocking. Attorney General Call, before we run out of time, I wanted you to talk briefly about the suit over the mental health care funds for educational programs. That's somewhere north of $10 million that the Trump administration has cut off. Again, this was approved by Congress in the wake of the Parkland shooting, the deadliest school shooting in American history, to help address mental health concerns of our students. What's happening with that suit, and where is it procedurally?
Well, we filed that suit a few weeks ago, I think a little over 2 weeks ago at this point. And, you know, as you said, this is similar to the one we discussed with the other education funds. But in this case, it was funds that were designed to support mental health programming in schools. They went to support training for mental health care providers, among other things. And again, we have a law that's passed by Congress. And rather than implement that law and ensure that it's being executed in a way that best serves the interests of the public, the Trump administration has instead come in and just said, we're not going to allow these grants to be provided. And so what that means is that kids in Wisconsin who would have benefited from these mental health services, if we don't succeed, will be impacted negatively by that. Back to this point about opportunity for kids and opportunity for Wisconsinites. If you're cutting access to mental health services or adult education or making it more difficult to get student aid if you're applying to college because you've dismantled the Department of Education, all of those things are limiting opportunities for Wisconsinites and for the American people, all in service of this ideological effort to slash government and make more money available for tax cuts. And so this is another example of the same type of policy we're seeing.
It's truly shocking. Again, that particular school-based mental health grant program was established on a bipartisan vote by Congress following the Parkland shooting. It was designed to permanently hire 14,000 mental health professionals into schools. That's what Trump wants on the cutting block. Big thanks to you, Attorney General Josh Call. Keep the fight going, sir. Make more good trouble. When we come back, I'm going to talk about how Donald Trump wants to bypass not just Tammy Baldwin's recommendation for a new federal court appointee, but also Ron Johnson's. Stay tuned, folks. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Are you having trouble hearing? Hearing loss can devastate the quality of your life. Now, there's an affordable fix for you or your loved one. Rated the best hearing aids of 2025 by Forbes Health, Audion Hearing has the highest quality hearing aids at the lowest prices, starting at just $98 a pair.
I actually like them better than my old $5,000 hearing aid.
I could not believe how my hearing and life changed.
Join over 1 million happy customers by going to audionhearing.com. That's AudienHearing.com.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life.
SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Trump is again trying to have it both ways on agricultural workers. He says they're working on, quote, a temporary pass where the farmer can have a little control as opposed to you walk in and take everybody away. He's describing feudalism, where the people who work the land are more under direct control of the land owners rather than the rule of law. He wants the vassals. He wants the lords. He wants the peasants.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Attorney General Josh Call for joining us last segment, talking about a few of the, I think he said upwards of 20 lawsuits that the Attorney General has filed on behalf of every citizen, every resident, and every voter in the state of Wisconsin, seeking to ensure that critical federal funds that help support our school systems, help with disaster relief, disaster prevention, job training, and all sorts of other things critical to the support of families in the middle class here in Wisconsin are protected, despite the slash and burn policies of the Trump administration, of course, spearheaded and led by our billionaire overlord, Elon Musk, and his Doge bros. I think it's just appalling, especially the mental health funding cuts. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Have any of your kids been treated or diagnosed and assisted by a mental health professional or a social worker in schools? I'd like to hear about it, because that one just smacks of such cruelty. And the fact that Congress enacted this particular program and allocated, appropriated this particular chunk of funding in the wake of the Parkland shooting to help kids deal with trauma in schools so that they are prepared and able to learn is just gobsmacking. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Have one of your kids been helped by a mental health professional or a social worker while they're at school? Tell us about it. Again, that's 855-75-CIVIC. Phone and text lines are open. There was another bit of breaking news today that, again, sadly, was entirely unsurprising and yet utterly disappointing. And that is that for a very long time in the state of Wisconsin and in other states, when vacancies on federal courts, either in the state of Wisconsin or relating to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which includes Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan, came up from time to time, either because a judge passed away while still serving or because a judge retired or took senior status, the process was to use a bipartisan commission to vet applicants. Based on that bipartisan commission's review and recommendation, the two senators, and in our case, a Republican and a Democrat, Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson, would get together, review that slate of candidates, and then pass along typically 3, 4, maybe 5 recommendations to the White House and the president for appointment to the federal bench. Well, Donald Trump has thrown that baby out with the bathwater as well. U.S. District Court Judge Diane Sykes, who will be vacating the Seventh, U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal Judge Diane Sykes, who came from Wisconsin, will be retiring from the Seventh Circuit in October. So Senators Johnson and Baldwin engaged the process to have this bipartisan commission review candidates and make some recommendations to the president about who should be appointed. Now, again, you're thinking, well, what the heck does Tammy Baldwin have to say about this? We've got a Republican president. Well, that was the point of the bipartisan commission. And in the past, given whichever party would hold the White House, even where it wasn't the party of one of our senators, they understood that the nominees or the recommendation for the nominee to the White House would reflect those more conservative or liberal or democratic values, right? So they weren't, Tammy Baldwin or Ron Johnson, generally speaking, as this process has moved forward, they wouldn't say, well, I'm not going to allow this more conservative lawyer or this more liberal lawyer to be appointed simply based on that lawyer's ideological lean, because the president has the right to appoint people to the federal bench. So it wasn't ever about that. But sources have told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that Trump officials, without any interactions with Senators Johnson or Baldwin, just decided they'd start interviewing people for this soon-to-be vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Yeah, forget you, senators. We'll just take care of this one ourselves. And apparently these interviews have been going on for quite some time, since apparently mid-May, and they have interviewed 5 people for that particular vacancy. Again, these are 5 people that Senators Baldwin and Johnson didn't vet, that the bipartisan commission didn't review. And again, Trump will just go it on his own. What I think is really sad here is that, again, this participatory process, the idea of trying to be bipartisan, to try to ensure that appointees to the federal bench are appropriately qualified, have appropriate temperament, has simply been thrown out the window by Donald Trump. And what is resulting in appointment after appointment is Donald Trump selecting people who are personally loyal to him. The most egregious and recent example of this is Donald Trump's appointment of Emile Beauvais to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Even Federalist Society members and Republicans are appalled and deeply concerned about that nomination. His reputation is one of a partisan, not a lawyer that has a conservative lean, not as a Federalist Society lawyer, but as an abject partisan actor, lacking objectivity, bullying staff, and he's been accused of directing DOJ staff to invent evidence against Kilmer Obrego Garcia, yeah, the guy that got deported without due process to CCOT. So again, Donald Trump trashing norms to all of our peril. It's not about partisanship, folks. It's about good process. When we come back, We will be joined by Center for American Progress advocate Mia Ives-Ruble. We're going to talk about the impacts of the big, brutal bill on folks with disabilities. I bet you have one in your family, in your neighborhood, or in your workplace. We discuss on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Sholly Pittman. Wisconsin operates three short-term housing centers for veterans. Two of them are set to close this fall if lawmakers don't act. The one here in Racine County will stay open. Here's Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale.
Three Northeast Wisconsin legislators have introduced a bill to restore $1.9 million to the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. The VHRP operates three short-term housing facilities across the state in Chippewa Falls, Green Bay, and Union Grove. They provide temporary housing, job training, and resources to veterans facing homelessness. While Governor Tony Evers did add almost $2 million to his biennial budget proposal to keep funding all three sites, the Republicans in the Joint Finance Committee removed it. The JFC's failure to fund the VHRP will force the centers in Chippewa Falls and the Greater Green Bay area to close. A bill introduced by Senator Jamie Wall of Green Bay, Representative Ryan Spouty of Ashwaubenon, and Representative Ahmad Rivera-Wagner of Green Bay would restore that funding to the budget and save the locations in Chippewa Falls and Bellevue. The legislature will reconvene in session this fall. In the meantime, the Chippewa Falls and Bellevue locations of VHRP will close on September 30th. Veterans residing at those locations will be offered alternative placement options and will continue to receive assistance through supportive services.
The Union Grove location will stay open past the end of September and will still accept applications. The Capital Times newspaper reports that location is also facing a lawsuit from the family of a man who died from dehydration. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Sholly Pittman. News at the top and bottom of the hour, or news anytime at WAUK.com.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Yesterday in the Beats, I talked a lot about the Emmy nominations, which were announced Tuesday morning. Kathy Bates was nominated for Best Actress for her role on the Matlock reboot. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Bates is the oldest actress ever to be nominated in the category at the age of 77. Bates crushed the old record set by Angela Lansbury, who was 70 at the time when she was last nominated for an Emmy. Lansbury bumping off Bates to keep her record would have actually been a great episode of Murder, She Wrote, or Matlock. In other old folks done good news, Harrison Ford has earned his first Emmy nomination at the tender age of 83 for his role in Shrinking. Ford plays therapist Paul Rhodes, who is battling Parkinson's. It's a nice honor for Ford, although it pretty much just means he's had such a great movie career, he's never had to do TV. Ford stars opposite Jason Segel and Wendy Malick on the Apple TV show. Both seasons are available to stream, and a third season has been ordered. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Stars, a few clouds around in the overnight, a light north to northeast wind. Morning low temperatures in the upper 50s to lower 60s. For Friday, though, quite a bit of sunshine. High temperatures in the lower to middle 70s. A few showers and storms Friday night. Right now, it's 64.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I imagine we'll talk about Superman. It's the same thing I said about F1. It's a great video. The music is great. The action's great. The CGI is great. I don't feel like they had to really develop the characters. It was fine.
I thought They did a really good job of showing Superman's, you know, humility.
I agree with you there. One of my positives, it wasn't 2 hours and 40 minutes like every other blockbuster movie this summer, but lots to like there.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Matt Nair on Air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, another state assembly rep is making an announcement seeking a spot in the state Senate. Find out which incumbent she's hoping to take out.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope your Thursday afternoon is going well. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. As always and ever, we've got a very busy show for you this afternoon. At the top of the hour, I'll be joined by Dr. Kristen Lierley and climate scientist Tom DiLiberto. He used to work at NOAA. We'll be talking about the Texas floods. Were they actually, could we have actually prevented these deaths? Were there early warning systems that because of the Doge billionaire overlord cuts didn't happen? Is Trump fundamentally putting communities in floodplains at risk by the dismantling of NOAA? We're going to get there this afternoon. And at 5:30, I'll be talking about fraud, waste, and abuse to the tens of millions right here in Wisconsin. You're not going to want to miss that. But right now, I'm joined by a prior guest from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, Mia Ives-Ruble. Thank you for taking the time this afternoon, Mia, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Yes, I need folks like you. I think we all need folks like you to help us ground ourselves in the very real world impacts of the big, brutal bill. So let's jump right in there. The big brutal bill took big, huge, nearly $1 trillion cuts to Medicaid. It is also going to end up hampering Medicare because of the deficit levels. This in turn is going to have some pretty devastating impacts for folks with disabilities. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how that's going to operate on the ground?
Yeah, there's a big misnomer or a big, there's a lot of talking points that are going out there that are saying that they aren't cutting Medicaid and that they're going to keep Medicaid for the most disabled. But I think people need to understand that disability isn't a binary thing, you know, it's on a spectrum, and the people that they are talking about are people who have made it through the process of SSI or SSDI, which is a cumbersome process to go through, where you have to submit a bunch of medical documentations and prove that you are disabled enough to receive those services. And so there are a ton of disabled people who are not within that category. It's about 2.6 million adults who are not on SSI or SSDI and have difficulty working, right? And so when we talk about these quote unquote work requirements, which are, they're really paperwork requirements, yes, because we know that a majority of people who are on Medicaid and aren't eligible for SSI or SSDI are currently working. And so they're working minimum wage jobs, jobs that don't provide health insurance. Only 8% of recipients between the ages of 19 and 64 aren't working. And that is mostly due to them either providing care to their parents or children. So, you know, when we're talking about what population they're talking about, it's a minuscule amount of people.
Again, that statistic is only 8% of Medicaid recipients aren't working, and most of those aren't working because of other care obligations. It's interesting to me that if they were really genuine about this, and of course they're not, you could do an analysis. You could audit Medicaid. You could follow up with that 8%. And if you wanted to be draconian about it, you would figure out the dollar value associated with that 8%, and that would be the cut. But that's not what they did, right? Like the fig leaf explanation is not in any way, shape, or form borne out by any data analysis, and I'm including data analyses that have been done by Cato and AEI, the American Enterprise Institute, which are incredibly conservative / libertarian leaning organizations. It just doesn't work. And this, I think, for folks with disabilities that may live outside of large urban areas with public transportation systems, with large other nonprofit services agencies, which can, albeit completely inadequately, try to at least assist folks who may be at acute need and risk because of the brutal bill's devastating cuts. You start looking into rural communities, and even that inadequate safety net isn't there. Tell us a little bit more about why this is going to be so difficult and painful in rural communities.
Yeah, what people don't understand is that the dollar amount that is paid towards Medicaid, which is a portion from the federal government and then a portion from the states, they cover specific services. However, that money gets doled out to many different things, like paying for wages for the employees that are there, including, you know, the cleaning staff and folks who are, you know, doing the examinations, et cetera. Yes. And then you're also paying for buildings, right?
Yes.
And so when you talk about reducing the number of people who are eligible for Medicaid, when that proportion gets smaller, it puts a lot of stress on places like hospitals and clinics in rural areas. In 2025, there were about 2,086 rural hospitals that received about $12.2 billion a year of net revenue from Medicaid. That's about a median of $3.9 million a year for each hospital setting. And these hospital settings have the lowest operating margins,
yes,
in the country, right? And so they aren't making a lot of money, and many of them are losing money. And so what we found is that 44% of rural hospitals are operating in negative margins. And as a result, more than 300 rural hospitals are at immediate risk of closure, which means that individuals who are living in these rural areas that already have to drive a long way to get to a medical clinic. I know my mom, my parents have a place up in Maine, and it takes an hour to get to the closest hospital. It's going to take even longer for those individuals. And so there's places that don't have maternity care.
Yes.
There's places that don't have specific services for some of the most at-risk people. And these people are just going to have to travel even farther. And some of them don't even have the transportation to do that.
Yeah, that hence my setup of the question, trying to contrast folks that may live in more urban settings with those in rural settings. And I'm just going to restate what you just said in maybe a little bit of economist terms, because that's the way I think about it. If you live in a rural area and you have a rural hospital, it is highly likely that that rural hospital is receiving a large part of financial support from Medicaid. It is further possible that that, relative to hospitals in large urban areas, that federal aid is going towards both physical plant and operating expenses, meaning it is essential for the continuation of services at that hospital. It's not only in paying for actual medical care, it is fundamental to the continuing operation of the hospital. Therefore, because rural hospitals rely so directly on Medicaid funding, and so many operate either at a loss or with extremely small revenue or net revenue margins, if they lose any federal funding because the federal government wants to require folks to fill out more paperwork, which if you're having problems, if you're living on the edge, your food or housing insecure, you're experiencing job loss, and you qualify for these programs, you take even a small portion of that away, you will definitely, not a question about it, lose rural hospitals. Have I said that fairly, Mia?
That
because
100%.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
I think please go ahead.
Yeah. I think it's also important to understand that Republicans put out this, relief fund for rural hospitals, which is $50 billion. It sounds like a lot to begin with, but when you break it down with the number of rural hospitals there are and the time period that this would be allotted, that would be about $4.5 million a year for each hospital. And these hospitals, again, are spending millions and millions of dollars already.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about this second point, which I don't think most folks who don't have a family member with a disability or are not themselves disabled in some way are completely unaware of. And that is the fact that federal law permits wage discrimination for disabled people. Explain why that is, or at least the purported justification. And frankly, the Trump's administration, their efforts to lock that wage discrimination in place for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch because a lot of folks don't understand that this actually is directly related to some of the Medicaid cuts that we're seeing. So 14C is an antiquated policy that was put into the Fair Labor Standards Act, which was intentionally, I'm guessing they were trying to be good. They were trying to find ways to get people into the labor market that had significant disabilities. Unfortunately, what it has become, the project has become, is basically paying disabled people subminimum wages with no opportunities to move up. And they're working in these sweatshop-like conditions, in locations that are basically glorified warehouses, sticking things into envelopes and sorting things. So these aren't jobs that specifically are inspiring for these individuals. Nobody aspires to become
an envelope stuffer,
right? Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so during the Biden administration, what they did was they put out a rule, a proposed rule to eliminate 14C, and Trump has decided to roll that back.
And the Biden administration's elimination of 14C would have simply meant that disabled people in the workplace are also entitled to that glorious windfall, also known as minimum wage here in the United States, which is $7.25 an hour, which equates to an annual income of about $15,000 a year, which I am unaware of any human being on the planet that can survive. Well, not on the planet. I should not speak so blithely. I'm not sure that any American can subsist on $15,000 a year. Truly, truly shocking. Folks, we've been talking with Mia Ives Ruble of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, disability advocate and friend of the show. Thanks so much, Mia. Please take care of you and yours. We'll talk again soon. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Donald Trump's election data grab and the election data lawsuit proceeding in New York State. There are some weird statistical anomalies going on. What exactly should we be concerned about here? We discuss on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag.
This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Jenna Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I've been trying to learn sheep's head for 40 years. My father-in-law is still a card counter, knows what everybody has. It is so easy to go, oh gosh, I still don't know who the partner is. And is that a trump card or is it not? And so I'm still asking myself all these questions while they're busy taking all of my nickels. The one thing that got me where they allow me to play is getting the app. For all the technology that's out there, that is one of the positive notes.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org, a public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. And welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you don't have to just listen if you want to watch the show. Civic Media's got a YouTube channel. You can check the show out there. You can also go to at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, Facebook, and X, and Instagram, Facebook, and X, and watch the show there. Big thanks to our last guest, Mia Ives-Rublet of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Just a quick final point about sub-minimum wages being legal for disabled workers. A number of states have eliminated that. Those states include Alaska, California, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, New Hampshire, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia. So one thing we can do here in the state of Wisconsin is get on the horn, call your elected state representatives, and tell them to get rid of the sub-minimum wage here in the state of Wisconsin. Our disabled friends, family, and coworkers deserve better than making $7.25 per hour. We also have some additional breaking news this hour on the Epstein front. Mick Mulvaney, Trump's former chief of staff, has claimed in an interview with Al Jazeera that President Trump is named in the Epstein files. Also this hour, the Wall Street Journal is apparently working on new details about Trump's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And Trump has been making efforts to get that stopped. Remember old Catch and Kill and Stormy Daniels? That was about an affair with a porn star. What do you think Donald Trump might do in this instance? And additionally, I hate that I am going to quote this guy, but that conspiracy theorist, right-wing nutjob Nick Fuentes, pretty much a complete racist. Yeah, even he's abandoning Donald Trump, who had dinner with him at Mar-a-Lago and has thrown him some love. Nick Fuentes has posted F you to Donald Trump. You suck. You're fat. You're a joke. You're stupid. You're not funny. This entire thing has been a scam. We're going to look back at the MAGA movement as the biggest scam in history. The liberals were right. We will see Donald Trump as a scam artist. Oh, my goodness. Just shocking. Also in breaking news, Donald Trump has been diagnosed with chronic venous insufficiency, which is why his ankles have appeared quite swollen and his hands bruised. That was coming out of photos this weekend. Well, medical professionals say that condition takes years to develop. So much for Donald Trump's prior White House physicians' allegations or claims that he's the healthiest guy ever to be in the White House. But I wanted to focus in for this last segment this hour. By the way, just on Epstein, tomorrow at 5:30, I'm going to share with you what I believe the mainstream media is missing in its Epstein coverage. And for me, this one is personal. And I hope you can tune in tomorrow at 5:30. Again, 5:30 tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show, I'll discuss what I believe the mainstream media is missing in its Epstein coverage. For the rest of this hour, and again at 5 o'clock, we've got a climate scientist joining myself and Dr. Lyerly to talk about the cuts to NOAA and whether or not everything that is possibly doable to prevent a tragedy like Texas from ever happening again is being done by the Trump administration, or if they're actually making the odds of that level of loss of life worse. So you're going to want to stick around for that. Donald Trump has now sent letters and has sent out consultants into a number of states asking for their voter rolls, election data, to inspect their election machines. You know, like all the stuff that he tried to get in the big lie back in 2020, but was shut down by courts. Yeah, since he's now president, he's going to just go do that anyways. And of course, Donald Trump nearly daily continues to perpetuate the big lie. The big lie being that Trump actually won in 2020. This is very concerning. Donald Trump, of course, issued an election-related executive order. When he got into the White House, it has been substantially stayed by all federal courts that have looked at it. But the idea that the Department of Justice is going to now muck about in state election officials' records and processes and systems should be concerning to everybody, because under the Constitution, states are responsible for running elections. The federal government intentionally plays a very limited role to avoid a president, I don't know, rigging an election in his favor. So please watch this space. I guarantee you it is going to get worse before it gets better. The other thing that I wanted to bring to your attention is that there is an election lawsuit that is proceeding in New York State. It was brought by Smart Legislation, which is the action arm of a nonpartisan watchdog group. They filed the lawsuit over significant voting discrepancies in Rockland County, New York. Specifically, multiple districts in Rockland County where hundreds of voters chose the Democratic candidate for Senate, Kirsten Gillibrand, zero votes were recorded in those districts for Kamala Harris. The statistical probabilities of that happening are quite low. And I wanted to, so that lawsuit is proceeding. A motion to dismiss was denied and discovery is proceeding. And I want you to also consider this. In the 2024 presidential election, Donald Trump flipped 88 counties. This is despite the fact that he did not win the popular vote. The last time that happened was over 100 years ago in 1932, when Roosevelt carried 42 of 48 states, but he did so with 57% of the vote. And even in 1984, when Ronald Reagan won 49 of 50 states, 30 counties flipped blue for Mondale. Statistically suspect. We will continue that analysis as that lawsuit moves forward. Keep it locked in. We discuss the Texas floods with climate scientist Tom DiLiberto and Dr. Lyerly next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Wall Street had a good day. Here's CBS business reporter Jason Brooks.
The S&P 500 and NASDAQ posted fresh all-time highs thanks to a bigger-than-expected rebound in June retail sales, while initial jobless claims sank to a three-month low.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says doctors have diagnosed the cause of President Trump's swollen legs.
Chronic venous insufficiency, a benign and common condition, particularly in individuals over the age of 70.
She says the president is in excellent health. The House Rules Committee will meet to take up the Senate version of the bill that would cancel billions in funding for foreign aid and public broadcasting. Kathy Smith listens to National Public Radio in Wisconsin.
I donate money, but I'm a retired teacher. I don't have the income to support it with millions, you know, what it would need to keep going.
House Democrats may delay the vote with amendments tied to the Jeffrey Epstein files. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
WAUK.